You're very welcome to another episode of the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Billy Joe Padden. And today I'm having a chat with one of Mayo's greatest ever sports people. It is, of course, a man that's represented Ireland and Connacht and Mayo as well at various levels, Gavin Duffy from Ballina. Thanks very much for joining me. I hope you're keeping well.
Keeping well, Billy Joe. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, when we decided to do a couple of podcasts, you were one of the names at the top of the list. I suppose considering our history together as playing underage for Mayo at the same time, and then I suppose the different perspective you may have on some of the things we talk about in terms of GAA, considering your professional background playing rugby. And I suppose the thing that stands out for me is that we knew each other more when we were playing underage football and you excelled at rugby and Gaelic football. Growing up, was it easy for you to marry that and be able to play both sports, or was it just something that you enjoyed both sports and continued with them?
It's just very much born out of a love for sport, of all sports, really. I chanced my arm at everything. Very fortunate growing up in Ballina. It's a real sport in town. At some stage, growing up, every team seemed to have its moment in the sun, whether it was the rugby club had gone well, they'd won a league title. The basketball had been flying, obviously winning national titles. I remember Shelburne coming to town to play Ballina in an FAI Cup soccer match, and we were all mad about soccer for a while. I togged out for the town once. and athletics then as well, you know, we would have had some stars in athletics as well. So there was so many different sports, and of course the Gaelic as well then, and especially 1989, Mayo getting to All-Ireland semi-final and final. That was my first real taste of going to big games as well, and obviously your dad playing in midfield and Lee McHale being a local hero. So there was so many various touching points that just, I suppose, inspired me and so many other of my friends in the area. And then you always, whilst you're inspired, you also need somebody to coax you along the way and to put a structure or an opportunity to put a ball in your hand. And we were very fortunate in Ballina again, so many people who volunteered across so many different clubs, and you know, there's two or three that really stood out and made an impact over you know, that those couple of years, and just helped really form a love of sport. And I was just mad into it, Billy Joe, and any chance I had, I was going to play some sort of game, or, you know, whether it was five-a-side soccer or, you know, in goal, last man in, or whatever it was, penalty shootout, you name it, we would have done it in the local field. And just loved sport, loved it.
I suppose just taking into, you know, your school and you went to secondary school in Roscrea, and I suppose my understanding of that school in terms of being predominantly rugby-based and gave you a real good grounding in the game, I presume.
Yeah, it did, and it wasn't for sporting reasons that my parents sent me down there. It was because of they feared for my education if I didn't have some kind of structure around a school that kind of catered for both sports and your education. And I think they knew, I suppose, at the age of 12, 13, I was involved in so many different teams, and my mum being a teacher and was very conscious that my studies might fall beside, go the wayside if I didn't have some kind of structure. And she knew I'd be pulled and dragged across the county playing different sports, and not pulled and dragged, wanting to go and jumping on every bus that we're leaving from a school to get out and play football. So I suppose it wasn't for the fact that it was a rugby school and any imagination that I was sent down there. It was because of the educational side of it. I had a few cousins that had gone as well, and a few local fellas had gone, and I suppose a school like that just offered the balance where they we had a full day school Monday, Tuesday, half day Wednesday, school again Thursday, Friday, and half day on a Saturday, and those half days were to facilitate sport. You know, and you're out the gap, it's 3 o'clock every other day, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and straight in to the change room, tug out sport for an hour and a half. And it was just, yeah, it was kind of made for someone like myself who's mad into sport. And the two sports happened to be rugby and hurling. I didn't give the hurling much of a go until the sixth year, when we were betting the cup first round in sixth year, which was early January. So I had a full 6 months. I was going, oh, here, I'm not going to survive the last 6 months of boarding school with no sports. I went out to hurling, and my Irish teacher was the whole hurling coach at the time, and he goes, what the fuck are you doing out here? I said, she always told me to come out. He goes, but I never meant it, he said. So he literally threw me a slip there and told some other fella, take him off down the other end of the pitch there, out of harm's way, and don't get anyone hurt.
So, if the Stephenites heard that, they would have had you out with a hurling.
I would have been out. Yeah, but I got a week out of the hurling, I think, and I said, all right, it's not for me. I'd be a danger to myself and other people. But that's how I was. I just mad to play any sport, you know. So
that structure, and I suppose maybe the mentality as well in the school, must have helped you develop as a rugby player, and you must have learned a lot. Must have been coaches that had a significant impact on your development at that stage.
Yeah, it was. And I think even from a young age, like, you can't underestimate the impact. I'm sure you can look back and pick a couple of, I suppose, coaches, but mentors almost, like, from a young age, even in Belmullet or in school level, Billy Joe, that you could point out, God, that fella really installed something in me, whether it was the competitive side, whether it was the, you know, kind of a, almost like a loyalty to your team, whether it was an acknowledgement of, you know, you're playing for more than just the guys beside you. You're representing the parish, you're representing the school. I picked up something from all coaches along the way, like, and there was two or three guys, I suppose, that really stood out. One being Hugh Lynn in the Quay in Ballina. He was the national school principal as well in the Quay, and he coached us in every sport that was going, whatever age, whether it was community games, under 10 it was Gaelic football, under 11 it was rugby, under 13 it was basketball, and he just brought us through the age groups. And I wasn't the only one. It was Ger Brady ahead of me, Willie Rowan, David Brady before that. And so many fellas could look back and say that he really shaped their love of sport, but also instilled in us that sense of competitiveness. You know, you really had to work hard. You had to keep your feet in the ground. He wouldn't have been too shy of telling you you're getting big for your boots, you know, which was great as well, a great grounding. And, yeah, just really competitive drive and be the very best you can be. And he made you feel 6 foot tall at times, even though you might have been only 2 foot tall, but he always, whatever way he did it, he made you feel like a giant, but you always kept your feet on the ground. You know, so he stood out. But as I said, there were so many coaches along the way, and in Ross Gray as well, the same as well. We would have had coaches who taught you different things. And I'm sure you've had those, Billy Joe, as well, that made an impact along the way.
Yeah, for sure. And I just was thinking you would have been coming home in the summers, and we would have been, I suppose, meeting up to play, I think, under 16 and a couple of years minor, and stuff like that. That must have been like a break from, not so much a break from rugby, but it was so something new for you as well, coming back to Mayo and seeing, I suppose, the likes of us that you probably hadn't seen all winter, and playing a different game with some of your clubmates from Ballina and fellas from all around the county.
It was brilliant. Like, that was, I lived for rugby in the wintertime, and then whenever you got best in the league or the cup, or whenever the season finished with rugby, straight into the Gaelic, and then you were committed to the Gaelic until whenever the championship finished. Regardless if the rugby started up again, you were with the Gaelic until that finished. And certainly, like, I suppose the football did take off in Ballina. Again, I was lucky enough that we had the Brady twins, and Tommy Knight was our mentor growing up. And again, a fella who, he just loved football, and he instilled that love of football into us as well. And again, about being proud of where you're from and always representing the people that you're from to the very best of your ability. And I remember Tommy used to always say, right, lads, no matter who we were playing, Tommy would have met a fella down the town who would have said, lads, if you lose tonight, you'd be the laughing stock of the town. And no matter who we were playing, yeah, what age we were, you know, he'd come in and he said, right, lads, be quiet, you're like cackling hens. And we used to thrive on that stuff, like, you know. And we had a right good kind of group of players who were committed and used to call training, and we won the Fail under 14s, and a lot of that team then kind of progressed up to Stephen Knights, obviously, along the way. But yeah, I used to love that under 16 team, Billy, the Ted Webb. Again, that was kind of the first representative side that we would have got a touch of, with Billy McNicholas and Eugene Ivers and Eugene Loftus as well. God rest him. He used to drive us down from Ballina.
Yeah.
And just great days, like, just going down and meeting the likes of yourself and your brother at the time, and John O'Hara, and just lads from around the county, and really going, wow, there's so many good footballers in the county, and you just love being there. Like, and the training sessions as well, even going into minor, some of the best games of football we would have ever played was in-house games, you know, and just the camaraderie we had amongst the squad was brilliant.
It's helped as well in that, as you said, we had a lot of good players. We were winning a lot of games. I think we ended up winning the Ted Webb, had a real strong team. In terms of just your own game at that time, you played midfield, you were very dynamic, getting all around the field. You were a big part of that team for us.
I don't know. I think it was just a part of the team, Billy Joe. Like, I suppose that's the first thing was you were trying to get picked. As you said, I think we were lucky as well that there was an expectation around that you would win when you pulled on a Mayo jersey. I'm not too sure how you felt. Like, obviously, there's a bit more pressure on you as well, being the son of an idol for so many of us at that age. Like, you know, that must have been, like, we were looking at you thinking you were a god as well, because you were close to a god at home, you know? So I'm sure you had your own expectations to live up to, and that couldn't have been easier for you. But I think we're just a group of young lads that love football, I'm sure, weren't we? And we were probably naive as well in terms of, we thought they were the best days we'd ever have, you know? And it was just the love of it, wasn't it?
It was. And it was, I suppose, when you look back, now that you mention it, like, I remember specifically going into it, and the first thing you think of is that you're meeting all these other lads from the county, and you wonder, will I be good enough to make the team? Or, you know, all these other good players you played against in underage games. And then when you actually get to know fellas and you develop a friendship, it kind of creates that sort of team spirit, and you draw together. I suppose one of the games that I always look back on, maybe ruefully more so than many of the other games, and a back catalogue of losing big games, but was the minor game in 99 against Down. And I'm probably, it's because I'm living in Newry now and I'm reminded of it quite regularly, that it probably is one of the games I keep going back to. But what are your impressions? Because we were really solid throughout that year, some really good performances, ground out a couple of wins. How do you feel about that season generally?
That's out of all the games, Billy, and you said you have a backlog of defeats that you can look back on, and similar to myself, you know, but there's only a couple where you go, wow, I really wish we could replay that, because I think we were better than what we showed on that day in the final against Down. I think, I know you were involved the year before when we played Galway, and with JP Keane. And again, lessons in life, I can kind of plot them along the way. And one of them was that day in Tuam where we went up to play Galway, and a lot of the lads had been involved in Mayo the year before, and the minors had gone well, semi-final, I think, with the minors, and a good batch coming through. We'd won the Ted Webb for a few years, and you're kind of thinking, well, we'll do something now with Mayo this year, and completely either overestimated ourselves or underestimated Galway. I'd say it was a bit of both. Certainly, we overestimated ourselves that day, and I remember JP in the dressing room afterwards saying, lads, like, we were down the dumps, and again, just in terms of how we managed the situation, he realized we're developing players. He realized that, you know, it wasn't the end of our careers by any stretch of the imagination, but he put a flag down by saying, lads, this is how you respond in adversity will be the making of you, and will show your true character. And I've always taken that, I suppose, motto or mantra forward. And it was JP Keane that again reiterated that day up in Tuam. So I think we kind of took that into the following year, and we were a lot more grounded perhaps. And that probably gave us the ability to beat Galway in the lash and rain and Tuam. And you look back, I saw somebody posted the picture of the two teams. Like, they have some right good players, like, you know. As did we, in fairness. But, like, that was a great day for Mayo football that day. Like, and again, great to be part of it. But certainly, you know, we shot the lights out against Cork. And then the following week, or 2 weeks later, I think we possibly fell into the billing of being favourites and not being able to live up to it. And there's definitely one of those games, Billy Joe, I'd love to go back and replay and give a true account of ourselves in the final. And I personally, I look back and go, geez, I went out to mark Benny Coulter. I was told to mark Benny Coulter, and I literally went out to mark him. And as a result, he got in behind me for the goal. He got the deciding goal, really. I think it was in the first half, but I've always felt, geez, I actually went out to let him dictate to me, and I was going to follow him around the game, follow him around the pitch. And again, it was a bit of a lesson there, is that, yeah, you might be told to go out and mark somebody, but the easiest way to do that is to have them to worry about you.
Do you know what? That's something I feel as well, that, you know, happened maybe again later on in my career when you're preparing for big games where you're trying to process, and this is the way I think about it, and maybe you think differently, you're trying to process, okay, well, how do we win this title, when really all you're to do in any given outing is beat what's in front of you, go and win that game and forget about everything else. And maybe we didn't focus that well. And that's kind of what you're saying to me, is that if you'd have gone out and just said, look, I have to play this game to play my best, do my job for the team, instead of maybe worrying about some of the other things, we probably all would have, you know, I'm sure we all would have played a more consistent game, because there were opportunities as well. We had chances in the second half to get goals ourselves and miss those. I think maybe Alan missed a chance in the second half that we often talk about.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's probably overshadowed by the way I feel about the game. Like, I'm sure, like, you know, you were saying that some of us fellows have kind of maybe recall it differently than maybe they felt they had a right good game. But I suppose I've that sense inside me that, geez, I didn't play my role that day for us to have a right good crack and ultimately to beat Down and win the All-Ireland, you know. So that's one that stands out, right?
Well, I think there was many people in that game that probably didn't play, myself included, didn't play as well as we could have, and probably well as needed to win a title. But just, I suppose, thinking about my expectations for you when I was playing with you, I looking back on it, I always felt that you were going to go on and make a professional career for yourself in rugby. And it was exciting at that time in terms of it wasn't professional that long, and you had an opportunity to be a professional athlete. I think that's something we all would have jumped at, and I think many young people at that stage would aspire to something like that. Is that how what you felt through your latter years in Roscrea when you were maybe getting some recognition in terms of rugby and in terms of what was ahead of you after your underage career?
No, to be honest with you, I think you had more faith in me than I had myself. I think you're being kind to me there, I think. You know, I look in that team and there were so many fellas. Like, the one thing that really annoyed me about that, Billy Joe, about losing that game to Down was that people could, and I'm going to harp on about it, but that people could kind of cast us in the whole Mayo psyche thing that we weren't able for the final. And I just didn't buy into that at all. Like, so that, I suppose that's what really annoys me, is that we didn't play well in the day, rather than this whole notion that Mayo can't deliver on the big day and Mayo have this mental block or Mayo have this curse. Like, that bullshit really annoys me, and I just wanted us to be different. Because I could see, you know, the talent was there, and as you said, there's so many good fellas there. And it's funny, you assume everyone on mass will just move up to 20s or 21s, and everyone on mass will go in and play for Mayo after that. Yeah. Like I said, those games we used to play out in Park, I think we used to train, didn't we? And like JP came just stand in the middle of the field, and that's all the coaching was. Charlie Lambert as well, I think. And it's just, where's the space? Look up. Did you see Billy Joe? Did you see Owen Gallagher moving? And he kind of went, no, I didn't. He goes, no, you'll see him the next time, because he's making those runs for you. And that was his coaching style. And he just coached you how to move around the field and make it look easy. And then I had someone like James Gill, who was doing all the running anyway beside me. So and looking well at the time.
Yeah. I know, yeah. You know? Gilly was covering every blade of grass, making us look bad, that's for sure. Yeah. And kicking balls with his left boot from all over the place.
Yeah, so look, there was so many talented players. I think one thing it did was it opened up my eyes as well to, like, wow, you really got to keep driving on here, because there's so many good fellas around, good footballers who are also very ambitious. But I think, yeah, I didn't have any notions of where I was going next.
How did it come about? I suppose after school, we met up again in university in UI Galway. But I suppose that whole transition to professionalism, how did that come about?
It literally came about so. We played the All-Ireland final, I think it was September time. I was just going into sixth year. So I was finishing school then the following June. And I think around the May time, I got a call from the RFU to go up and have a meeting with them. And at that stage, I was focused on, obviously, on the Leaving Cert and trying to get my place in NUIG into commerce. And that was my biggest focus. And then play rugby in Galway more than likely, and then continue on to play football in the summertime. That was my only thought. And within that meeting with the RFU, they were saying, like, you know, if you were interested to join the academy, at the time it was like a national academy, would you join the national academy? And I said, I'd have to think about it, because I'm mad into the football as well. And what does that mean? And he kind of said, well, you'd have to give up the football. And I said, well, that's a big decision. You know, I haven't really thought about that yet. And at the time, the director of rugby kind of said, oh, well, are we kind of wasting our time with you? So are we? I said, no, not at all. I just, you know, I didn't expect to be making a decision today.
Yeah.
And my dad was in the room beside me, and there's a guy, Liam Hennessy, who I have so much respect for, who was involved in the S&C side of things at the time. He kind of noticed that the conversation perhaps wasn't being going down the right path. And he stepped in and he said, look, it is a big decision. He goes, I'm involved at GAA as well. I'm involved. And I see so many fellas even being torn between hurling and Gaelic. So I can't imagine what it's like between Gaelic and rugby. So, you know, you do need a bit of time to see where you end up and to take a bit of time. And it is a big decision. And he kind of said, look, you don't want to fall between two stools either. And I suppose that was the one takeaway point from that meeting was, yeah, I didn't want to fall between two stools. So I got the leaving cert, I got the points to go to Galway, and at the time, again, it was questioned in that meeting. Director of Rugby asked me, where do you want to go to college? And I said, I want to go to Galway. And he said, Jesus, you go to Galway, graveyard of ambition. And I said, well, surely that's up to the individual. You know, I'm driven. I want to go training. And he's like, well, you know, if you go there, it's going to be a tough road for you. But again, that probably made me more determined to prove him wrong because where I'm from, I suppose, that sense of pride that where you're from drilled into me since I was 8, 9 years of old, years of age, that no matter who you're playing anywhere around the country, you're better than them if you've put your mind to it. And that kind of shone through. And I got the points to go to Galway, wanted to stay in Galway, had an opportunity to go to Galwegians, who were going well at the time. Really good setup. John Kingston was the head coach there, who'd come from Richmond in the Premiership. Richmond had gone bust financially, and John found his way over to Galway and started coaching Galwegians. And Galwegians at the time were made up of nearly the whole Connacht squad. They were kind of split between Galwegians and Buccaneers. So the likes of Eric Elwood was there. Derek Brady was going to be joining. Willie Rowan was there. He was from Ballina as well. David Mescal from Ballina. And just very ambitious and great setup. Semi-professional, I suppose, in Galwegians. And as part of the Irish Academy as well. So that's how I kind of managed then. That along college, and then by the time the summer came along, I just realized I couldn't play football at that stage. So I played my last game of football. I did the leaving cert. I went up to Ballina. I was training with the Ballina senior team. I think I played a league match maybe against Clamaris. I played a championship match the following weekend against Knockmore, ended in a draw, and I didn't play the replay at that stage because I'd been involved with the Irish schools who were going on tour to Australia.
And Australia, not more, you know, I don't know which one I'd
that's,
go for.
Yeah, yeah. But at the time, I didn't think that would be the end of my footballing career. I just thought I'd go to Australia for 5, 6 weeks, play rugby and come back and pick up with the 21s.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's where I just thought it was. So I hadn't kicked the football from, June, July of 2000 until 2014. I hadn't gone togged out. I hadn't trained. I hadn't played with anybody in those 14 years. And it was crazy. Looking back now, I cut the cord so easily.
Yeah. Look, I suppose you focus and you move on to different targets when ambitious, I suppose, sportsmen like yourself. And you know, that sort of transition from semi-professional to professional with Connacht and even moving on maybe to Harlequins. And how did you find that just in terms of a change in lifestyle and a change in level of preparation?
I suppose the big thing was finishing college, getting through the commerce degree in NUI, and then that was at the end of 3 years, obviously, and I had 2 years with Connacht played at that stage, and there was huge uncertainty around Connacht early 2003. There was talk of disbanding in the province and that the only investment would be into the other three provinces. So that was a really uncertain time. Again, kind of we've got our back up a bit as well in terms of why would they do this to Connacht, and there was very little happening in terms of players being retained or recruited at the time. And John Kingston, who I got to know in Galwegians, was in touch with me about going to Harlequins. And I suppose at that stage, I didn't want to go to any of the province. It was like, Becky, you're not looking after us in Connacht. So, I just couldn't see myself. It'd be like trying to play for Galway or Roscommon or Sligo. It didn't appeal to me. It didn't. I couldn't get over the fact that I could play for my closest rivals. At the time, I just didn't make sense to me at all. So for some reason, it made sense to move to London, to a city I've never been before, and play for a club that was known as a city club, and everything that goes with that. But at the time, there was two or three other Irish guys going as well that I'd known. The fact that John Kingston was there, I knew that he would back me as well. It was a great move. Really enjoyed my time in London as well. And we had some tough times. We got relegated in the third season, which was really, really hard going. Plenty of tears were shed at the time. People talk about professional sport and people can just move on. But, it was a decision there to leave at the time. Again, come back to some of the provinces or go elsewhere in England. But I just felt I'd been part of the problem that in terms of got relegated as a squad, but I could see there's so many good young lads coming through the academy in Harlequins at the time, and I wanted to be part of the solution. And when I saw when I talk about good players coming through the academy, it was like Mike Brown, Danny Kerr, Chris Robshaw, Jordan Turner Hall, like four guys who all went on to play for England, three of them, you know, stellar careers with England. And there's plenty of guys coming through. So they signed the likes of Andrew Mertens as well, and Will Greenwood was still there. So I still felt that we could get back on track, and if we got back to the Premiership, we'd kick off again. But you know, there was a few twists and turns in the road since then.
I suppose then, in relation to your Ireland career, you made your debut in 2004 in South Africa. That must have been, I suppose, nearly intimidating and nerve-wracking in many ways. To make your debut is big enough in itself, but then in South Africa, where they have, not that I'm any expert on rugby, but the reputation for being, you know, physically aggressive in the way they play, it must have been a brilliant, brilliant moment for you.
It was it happened kind of by chance, really. In the end, there was 24 players on the tour, and Jordan Murphy, I think, was supposed to start. Sharing a room with Jordan, he fell sick on the Thursday, so I didn't share. I moved out of his room on Thursday night, and Friday I think I moved out again. And he said he was grand, he was fit to play. Saturday morning he woke up, he goes, "Yeah, I'm grand. So I kind of went off for a wander. My dad had travelled down to South Africa with three or four of his friends to hopefully see me win my first cap. He wanted to be there, and so he wanted to go shopping and buy something for my mum as well. So I said, "Look, I'll go with you to make sure you buy something decent for getting 2 weeks to go to South Africa."
Yeah.
I said, you better come home with something out there. So at the time, sure, like, mobile phones were, like, you'd be afraid to have the mobile phone on in case the battery ran out, like, you know, so it was probably turned off half the time.
Yeah.
And I came back probably 2 hours before kickoff, and the doctor was on the steps of the hotel. I think I'd done a session already that morning as well. And if I'd done a session, it was definitely all upper weights in there, because the summer, it was literally the end of the season. So I was wanting to look up the beach more than anything else. So I was probably sore in the chest and the arms, like, you know. So the doctor said, "Where have you been?" Jordan has got sick, so Eddie O'Sullivan's looking for you. And again, as I said, there's a few comments and a few moments along the way that you remember, and I'll always remember walking up to Eddie and saying, "Well, Eddie, what's the crack?" And he goes, "Well, I probably didn't say what's the crack. I said, how are you, Eddie?" And he literally said, "Get your head out of your ass. You're on the bench." So, so that was it. And I remember I went up. I didn't need anything at that stage. Lunch was over. I went up. I got on the phone, text my dad, text my mum at home, said I'm going to be on the bench. And then I was on the bench, the national anthems were on, I looked around the stadium, and Jesus, like, there was, like, Newlands is a class stadium, it's massive, but I managed to spot my dad in the crowd, and he had his arm up in the air giving us the wave, and that was just a magical moment. It was just, again, a few moments that stand out. That was a really proud moment. And then to come on after maybe 15-16 minutes, I think, when Gervin Dempsey got a sore eye, I came on, and again, another comment on the day, Shane Byrne was ready to take a line out, and he looked at me and he said, "This is what you wanted, wasn't it?" And I was like, "Yeah." And it just made me feel so at ease. Like, I've never felt so alive. I'm sure you felt it as well in big days in Croke Park or McHale Park or wherever you've been. And you just feel so alive. Like, you just feel, this is where I want to be. I feel so comfortable in my surroundings. And I loved it. Loved it. And you come into the dressing room, and immediately you've got the knees taken from under you by Anthony Foley or somebody saying, "He's your one cap wonder, kid." And you kind of go, "Oh no, I need to get a second cap quick."
Yeah.
So yeah, there were good times and great memories, you know.
I remember specifically watching the Six Nations was probably easier for everyone to watch. I know it corresponds with now with National League games, so I don't see as much of the Six Nations as I'd like to go into National League games. But your try in Murrayfield as well, that must have been, that's probably one of the things maybe people remember more from your Ireland career that maybe speak to you about it, I presume.
Yeah, and a lot of people would consider that was my first cap, because they may not have seen the game in South Africa. So yeah, it is. It's funny how many people will come back and say, "I remember when you got your first try." And to be honest, Jay, it's lovely to hear that now. At the time, you know, you still get a bit embarrassed when people say, "Oh, I remember that time you scored a try." But it's lovely that people have that memory and that I don't know whether people felt proud, but they had a happiness or something about it that I feel very grateful that people kind of had my back, I suppose, and were rooting for me. And it's nice that when people say things like that, you know, that
I think you're right, because I remember watching it, thinking, I suppose I knew you from playing football with you, but I think that there's definitely a Mayo people thing where you're proud of your own, and you, even if it's not, you know, Mayo football, and we're obsessed about that, but whether it be, you know, playing rugby or some other sport or soccer, you know, or boxing, they you know, are really proud of, to see, you know, I suppose one of their own doing well. I think that's definitely a big element of sports supporters in Mayo.
Yeah, I think so. And even we were slagging there before we came on to the podcast, but 2006 Mayo against Dublin was just literally on TV. You text with the link, and I said, "Did you go?" Kieran McDonald just got the point. I was going, "That's the winning point." So, but like again, just watching, you know, yourself and the lads playing, and I only got it really coming from 40 minutes on or some of that, and but to see Ger Brady, who I'd been growing up with and playing with, and David Brady, and just everyone within Mayo, like Kieran McDonald, like you forget, like for everyone says he's a great footballer, you forget that he was a workhorse that day, like, you know, like phenomenal effort. Even before he kicked the winning point, he was in his own 45, rounded into the pitch, got on the last pass and kicked over the bar. But just the intensity and the pride that fellas were playing with for Mayo, and the pride you had in ye guys. I don't know. Did you appreciate at the time that you were kind of inspiring people, or did you have that sense? I don't know, you had 80,000 people in Croke Park. Half them probably be from Mayo. So maybe that was a bit more obvious for you, where you could see the local community and it had an impact. Like with rugby, I'm not too sure if I was making that kind of impact or if I was inspiring people. Maybe I didn't really think about it in Ballina. I know when we got to the minor final, for example, my local neighbours made a best it up to Gavin in the final and put it up down the Key Road. Yeah, and like for me, I had made it, like, because I had seen all those banners for 89. For Mayo getting to the final night. So I was like, wow, people care. Like, but I don't know. And I think because my dad used to say to me, oh, he'd meet fellas in Ballina, and he goes, well, how's the young fella? How's the footballer? Never said, how's the rugby player? How's the footballer getting on?
Yeah.
Well, playing football. So I don't know. How did you find it, Billy Joe? Did you find that you were inspiring people like her?
I think what you're you're right in that. I think that's as much to do with the obsession that everyone in Mayo has with the Mayo football team. You know, even more so maybe than some of their, you know, there's great Mayo supporters out there that mightn't feel a real close connection with their actual local club, but the Mayo football team, people travel home from America and England to follow it, and they mightn't necessarily know what's going on with their home club. I think, though, what you're saying about the rugby side of it from your point of view is I think that the popularity of rugby has developed in the west of Ireland through what you've done, through the success that Connacht have had, and they're much more accessible for just general sports fans to watch them on television. And I think that definitely, maybe back then, Mayo people probably didn't feel a connection with the Connacht rugby team, whereas now that has definitely grown an awful lot. But just to get back to the you said you're watching the latter stages of the 06 game against Dublin, and I was on the bench at that stage just as well, like to let Brady and I think Andy Moore and come on and do all the good stuff. But yeah. I think when I look back at that game, I think that you maybe to this point at this stage, I always felt that, okay, well, we didn't go on and win the All-Ireland, so I don't really want to talk about that too much. But when you mentioned just the atmosphere and the feeling we had inside the stadium, and even there sitting on the bench, and usually when you're taken off, particularly in GAA circumstances, you're very disappointed because you're there thinking, going into an All-Ireland final or whatever, you think, oh, will I get my place or whatever, and it's wrapped up in your own personal ambition. But I just remember looking around me, sitting on the bench, and everyone, the whole stadium, on their feet, standing, and like you could see people with tears in their eyes at the end, and you know, that sort of emotion takes over and just, you know, quenches any sort of personal sort of worry you would have about where's your standing in the team. And it was just a magical moment. I suppose just on that, I was lucky enough to play with a lot of Kieran McDonald. You mentioned some of the personalities that you'd known, and you mentioned the Ger and Liam Brady and David. Did you ever feel like watching us playing, whether it be for Mayo in 04 and 06, when you were probably in the prime of your rugby career, and particularly, you know, with the Stephen Knights winning the All-Ireland Club, do you ever look back and think, you know, do you miss something there, or you missed out on something? I know you were doing your thing, but you probably couldn't afford to think like that, maybe.
No, I suppose it was a mix of, geez, you'd be really proud.
Yeah.
and appreciation of, wow, they're serious footballers as well. Like, like I would have seen you guys in action and set at minor level, and then very briefly, like I think there was a stage where, like, I remember I had one chance at the time to be on the bench for Mayo seniors, and I was still in school in Ross Grey, and I think we had an under-20s training session in Ballinrobe or something, or under-21, and we'd finished up, and Mayo were playing Donegal in Ballinrobe in some kind of match. I don't know if it was a league match or it was an opening of the pitch or something, and Mahan was manager, and he asked my dad, would I sit in the bench? And my dad said, no, his mother is expecting him home for the dinner. I was only 18 or something, like. And I remember he told me in the car on the way home, I said, you did what? Jesus, sure, I might never get a chance to play for Mayo ever again. Like, nothing got to do with rugby. I just thought, like,
you take every opportunity.
My chance. I might never get a chance, like, you know. And he just said, if you're good enough, you're good enough. You'll get a game again. Yeah. And you'll be plenty old enough in a while. But and without fast forwarding maybe the conversation, but like getting an opportunity in 2014, and whether that was just my ego or whether it was just an itch, I really felt, for me personally, I had to scratch that. Allowed me to finish my sporting career whilst it was a devastating loss in Limerick, ultimately, that it finished that particular season. It felt that at least I'd given it a crack. And for all the times I watched you guys on TVs, whether it was in a pub in London on a Sunday morning to go down to Sky and watch you guys because I didn't have access to it at home in the flat, or whether it was, I was actually at a wedding in 2006 when you played Dublin, and my dad was keeping me up to date on a text messaging, and like I could make head nor tail of the update he was giving me, because you were up and you were down, and you were like, and then at the end it was like, they won. I was like, who won? But I always just felt a huge pride about Mayo football, and I suppose I wanted to conduct myself that I would play like you guys were playing. And what really frustrated me was that you guys didn't get over the finish line, and this shit about not having marquee forwards or this curse, that really, really frustrated me, because I'm going, well, I'm like those fellas and I don't feel that. So I couldn't for imagined think that you felt you weren't good enough or didn't have the belief. And I was so frustrated for you guys that you didn't get over the finishing line, you know.
In relation to 14, like, how did that all come about? A lot of people ask me, how did you end up playing for Armagh? It just was simply one phone call. Do you want to go and play? And of course, I was just the same. Well, you know, I'm not playing for Mayo now. It's not viable for me to be traveling up and down. And you just go, okay, why not? To get to meet people, you get to test yourself again, and you get to compete as much as anything else. But yeah. For you, it sounds like there was something more. There was that connection maybe to Mayo that was driving you, maybe something that you thought that you wanted to prove to yourself.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it was, it's quite selfish. I wanted to be challenged. Now, I would imagine when James Horn rang me that he probably didn't have any intention of me even training. So he rang me. We were finished. I knew I was kind of finished up with Connacht. I didn't really know if I was finished up with rugby, to be honest with you. Was that 2014, Pat Lamb's first year? And I kind of struggled the last 6 months through injuries, and I found the love of rugby and the day in day out grind was kind of getting to me a bit. And if you ask my wife, she'd say it certainly was getting to me. Like, I was probably a bit down the dumps at the time, and we were playing Ospreys away in the very last game, and I was traveling sub or what I was, but I saw I had a missed call from James Horn that morning, and I said, I wonder what he's ringing me for now. And straight away, you're kind of like, I'm going, geez, you know, when you go to a match, Billy, when you're younger, and you know, if like, geez, what if like they had three injuries, and like you could be 16 at the time, yeah. 8 at the time, and they need someone from the crowd. I always thought I'd be the man. They'd pick me out of the crowd, right? So, and I don't know, it sparked an idea in me that like, geez, I wonder, does he know I'm finishing, and like, would he want me in? And I was like, you know, like it was my ego talking more than anything else, probably thinking I could do a job. So anyway, I texted him back after the game. I didn't ring him before the game, but I texted him back after the game, and I said, sorry, Mr. Call, do you want to catch up? And he said, look, I'll give you a call tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And like, as is tradition, at the end of the season, we'd have a bit of a late night and an early start the next morning. We'd have an all day on the Sunday. And like, we were in the pub at 10 o'clock on the Sunday, and we'd a core session, and usually, you know, misdemeanors from the year would be brought up, and you'd have to drink a few pints. And I was ducking and dodging all these pints because I wanted to be coherent talking to James Gordon.
So you did well to keep it brief at 12 o'clock.
I wanted to make it sound like I was coming out of mass, not coming out of a pub at 12 o'clock. So he rang me anyway, and he just said, look, I believe you're finishing up with the rugby with Connacht, and you might have a few spare weeks if you want to come in and see what's going on, and maybe you know, have a look at what's going on. And I just asked him, like, do you want me to come in and see what's going on, or do you want me to come in and tug out and train? And he said, why, what do you want to do? And I said, well, if I'm going in, I want to tug out and train, like, and I want to give it a go, and I want to be part of it. And he said, right, well, if that's what you want to do. And I said, well, yeah, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. Not kind of, you know, dip my toe in, or not kind of maybe train on a Tuesday and then, you know, sure, see you next week. And again, I think it was maybe my ego talking that, yeah, I can do this. I haven't kicked the ball in 14 years, but sure, I'm well able to, like. And that was on the Saturday. Sunday, got the call then on the Tuesday. I said, so when are you training next? And he goes, sure, I'll be in touch to let you know. I said, well, when are you training next? He goes, we're training Tuesday night. And I said, sound, I'll be there Tuesday night, so. And I went up, and Tom Prendergast gave me a lift up to, the selector gave me a lift up to Castlebar, and I trained away anyway. And as I got into the field, Alan Dillon was the only one I really knew from before. And he was rubbing the DPs frantically into his groins, you know. So I was like, Alan, I'll hang around with you tonight. Yeah. But as I was going on, like, I didn't know what I was letting myself in for, to be honest with you. And James said, look, I have no idea what you're going to be like, or, you know, I have no expectation other than you conduct yourself as a profession that you've become, and show what it means to be professional, basically. That's kind of what he wanted from me. And it was, you know, James, he was very to the point. And I said, well, I can do that at least. I can apply myself at least. And trained away for the night, overcarried probably 3 or 4 times, got into contact, got ball belted out of my hands, probably kicked it wide a few times. It was a bit of a humbling experience. And afterwards, I was in the circle with Alan Dillon, and I said, geez, that was tasty enough tonight. And he goes, it wasn't too bad. No, like, a lot of us played games the weekend, so they took it handy on us. And I was, oh my God, are you serious? And Tom Prendergast brought me home in the car, and as I hopped out of the car, both calves, hamstrings, the whole lot cramped. I'm sure he looked at me going, this fella, professional athlete, and he's banjaxed after one night of training.
Did they not realize you spent 2 days drinking after the end of the season?
Probably was the issue at the same time. So and then the Friday, then all the Dublin lads came down. So you had all the O'Shea's and Tom Parsons and a lot more guys came down the Friday night, and that was up the top pitch in Castlebar. And I was going, like, I had watched all these guys over the previous 4 or 5 years and roared them on. Like, I mean, roared them on, like, in the stand. Nearly got into a row with a Kerry fella beside me in 2012 when he was going, ah, Mayo, the same old shite, or 2013, 2012. And I said, no, they're not. Yeah. So I was like, geez, this is kind of getting serious now. And I remember we were getting togged out, warmed up. Donny Buckley took the warm up. And after 20 minutes, I was going, oh my God, this is, whew, Jesus. And Donny's words was, right now, lads, we're ready to go training. I was going, oh my God. And Ed Coughlin was the S&C guy. And he said, right, lads, everyone down here, we're going to do a bit of running. And I was, oh dear God. And then Donny said, actually, we'll have, Donny Vaughan, Gav Duffy, Aidan O'Shea, Alan Dinnan, Tom Parsons, come over here to me. We're going to do a bit of tackling, a bit of defence. And I went, oh, happy days. Jesus, I get out of the running, because, like, the running looked like it was going to be crazy. Anyway, we did a bit of defence, and it was pushing and shoving and working in channels. And 10 minutes later, I was getting sick. Like, I was dying, like. Like, it was just completely different. Like, and I suppose I was probably nervous as well. And I was exerting myself. Like, I was going balls out, like, trying to impress. So that was my first introduction. And then from there, I kind of kept my head down and I did my extra running sessions. I went from 94, 95 kgs down to around 88 kgs by the end of it, because I was just running. And even, I don't know, like, the game had moved on as well. Like, I was midfielder, ball get kicked out to you, you stood underneath it and you tried to catch it. Mm-hmm. And won the first A versus B games, I think it was maybe my second week, and I was marking Aidan O'Shea in midfield. And, like, he'd be standing beside me and he'd move 5 yards. And I was like, sure, I'll bridge that 5 yards when the ball is in the air. But then you had Rob Henley pinging it out to him like, and I'd move 2 yards and Aiden's already gone by me because he's had this pass right into his chest, 30, 40 yards from the goalkeeper. And I was like, oh no, the game has moved on.
It's really just, I suppose, we were training, you'd do the usual fitness tests and somebody'd tell you, oh, look here, John Hayes can do this and he's flipping 23 stone or whatever he was in just the time. And I was always skeptical. I was saying, there's no way he can do that fast. Keith Higgins can do that or something like that. But so it was just that difference in terms of just a different type of fitness that was the big challenge for you coming into that environment.
It was then, and obviously the skills, completely different ball handling skills. The game is played all around you in football. You know, there's movement everywhere off the ball. There's, there's so much space you got to be conscious of, either to move into space or to get out of space or to, when you get the ball, who's the best man to make a positive impact with the ball and not just kind of the nearest guy that, you know, you're being safe. And compared to rugby, whereas a fullback, I was watching everything in front of me, and I could kind of manage the field and all my surroundings from there. So it took a while to get back into it, to be honest with you. But I loved the challenge, it was a real eye-opener to the commitment as well. I don't know how you found it from going from Mayo to Armagh and, you know, are the commitment levels the same? I just thought Mayo was crazy, like in terms of fellas traveling from all over the county and fellas coming from Dublin up as far as Castlebar on a Tuesday night, Friday night, or everyone going to Longford on a Tuesday night to train, or everyone being in Achill on a 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and then the following morning you're back in Castlebar at 10 o'clock.
Well, I suppose the key thing for Armagh is that it's a much smaller county and it is a bit easier to travel around. And like I think in terms of like when I played for Armagh, we were playing Division One football. So there's a level of preparation that you have to go through. But there's no doubt, even from when I finished playing in like 11 and 12, that like the commitment levels have gone up again. And I just suppose the difficulty for Mayo is the distances you have to travel. But I suppose just as you, a professional, walking into that environment and, you know, I think lots of people talk about leadership and leading by example or different types of leadership. How did you see walking into that group? And as you said, you were probably nervous. How did you see the way that group interacted in terms of the leaders that were there? Was it obvious that there were certain people that were, I suppose, going to achieve, and this is the way I put it, I think, you know, you walked into a dressing room with some of the greatest male footballers ever, and you were there competing with them and trying to achieve something. Could you see that, I suppose, leadership in them instantly?
Yeah, and just the culture as well. And to contrast it, say, to a professional environment where, you know, there's movement of players. If you take Connacht, and Connacht isn't unique in this instance, where you do have Leinster probably the standout, where they have so many academy players coming through, and then they have one or two cherry-picked foreign players. But if you look at soccer and rugby, like, you have so many players moving from club to club, country to country, so that when you do have your squad together, and in a rugby scenario, in the Connacht's case, you do have your homegrown players, and those homegrown players and the coaches are trying to instill the sense of pride that we have for our province and mm-hmm. why we play the game. And it takes a while then for the foreign players, whether they're from Limerick or Cork or Dublin or Belfast or from Southern Hemisphere, to maybe get to know the area, get to know the people they're representing. And you're trying to create that it's more than just a group of lads running onto the pitch on a Saturday, that it's you're doing it for a community, you're doing it for five counties of the province, and everyone that's associated with Connacht. You want to do them proud. And you're trying to build that togetherness and a common sense, a common purpose. And at times it can be artificially made initially, because you're trying to create that culture and you're it's done on a whiteboard or it's, you know, it's discussed. And I'm not too sure, maybe because I had gone in after the National League, so maybe all those discussions kind of had maybe November, December time when the team first comes together. But I felt when I walked into the Mayo dressing room, there was just a huge togetherness and a common purpose. And that, for me, the only reason I was there was to win All Ireland. Like, I would have loved to have played. I would have loved to have been on the team. And that, yeah, personally, I wanted to be on the team, but I wanted nothing more than Mayo to win the All-Ireland. And I felt that was the only reason everybody was there. It wasn't about, I'm here because I got a better contract, or I'm here because I think I might be able to progress onto somewhere else, or I'm here because nobody else wanted me, or I'm here because, you know, it's my home province and I want to be. There's a myriad of different reasons why people can be at a professional team. But I felt, as probably is, like, it's going to be the case for Belmullet, for Ballina, for Mayo, mm-hmm. for Galway, for Sligo, there was one common purpose.
Yeah, in terms of, as amateur athletes, we always, I suppose, tried to gauge ourselves against professional athletes. But it sounds to me, based on what you're saying there, that in terms of the culture, that it's what you experienced with that Mayo team under James Horne was right up there with probably anything you'd experienced maybe at a professional level.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, yeah. And again, like, I was traveling from Galway, so it was maybe an hour and just over an hour away from Castlebar, and I'd be in the car probably with Jared Kafke, and I was getting to know the intricacies of the game, more so of Calf, like, you know, and engineering.
He would be a great one to talk about tactics, Calf.
Unbelievable. Like he'll make a great coach. Like, he's great insight into the game. And again, maybe playing from full back, he sees the whole game in front of him. I also probably got an engineering degree off him as well, because I was going, you do what at work? And what? Because again, I was finishing professional rugby, so I wouldn't have had too many conversations with fellas who were doing proper jobs. Like,
Yeah.
We would have been playing Nintendo in the bus when we were going anywhere, like, you know, Nintendo DS.
Not talking about flood risk assessment or something.
Yeah, you know, culverts or whatever he's going on about, you know. I said, they do what? Going into Ballinrobe and said, how does that water get from that tower to the houses? Explain me that one. Look, great. No more than when we're going to minor training and Barry Loftus and John Brogan, like, the crack in the chats we had in the car. So we got that with Jared Kafke, off on a tangent there. But, like, but the level of preparation, like, I wouldn't have been late for John, for Jared Kafke. When we said we were leaving Galway at 5 o'clock, like, we were on the dot leaving at 5 o'clock to be in Castlebar by whatever time, just after six, so that we could roll out, get a rub if we needed to. Just to be sure that, like, we were in good nick for training. And ultimately, like, you're probably on the pitch 20 minutes beforehand, kicking the ball around, getting your bits and bobs. Like, I was obviously trying to upskill and try and, like, Kevin McLaughlin kind of cozying up to me. I was trying to cozy up to Kevin, really, to try and get a few tips in terms of how to play passes in and stuff like that, and trying to pick up bits and pieces from fellas. But, like, lads were so willing to give you a hand and to steer you along the right way as well. But it was really reinstalled my love on and passion for sport again after a tough kind of 6 months with Connacht. Perhaps that I felt I was coming to the end of my career. I was kind of suffering a little bit through injuries and a little bit of form maybe, and I just kind of felt I was kind of petering out a bit.
So you probably look at that experience maybe more positively than I thought. Is there any sense of regret in terms of not playing, or I mean, there might have been a registration issue as well or something. Is there anything personally there that kind of bugs you?
No, like, I think it was a dream come true to play, and so much so that, like, even I after a month or so of not playing rugby, and I was in with Mayo straight from the start. I had a month of kind of almost being a fresh again footballer, because we were expecting our second child, and I hadn't started a job yet in Connacht. I knew I was going to be starting a job probably a month down the line, but I'd come back training with Mayo maybe 2-3 weeks, and I just started a job in Connacht on the commercial team, and I got a call on my second or third day there starting from an agent who he wasn't my agent, a rugby agent, rang me saying that there was a team in Paris, their fullback got injured playing for France. Would you be interested in going over as, like, a medical joker for at least 6 months to maybe the full season? And honestly, if it hadn't been for Mayo football, and I'd just started playing for Mayo football, I'd probably...
Gone to Paris,
because I was going, yeah, feck it. Different conversation to have with my wife, who was expecting a second child, and we would have had no support in Paris. But... I genuinely, like, there was an opportunity obviously to start a career with Connacht in terms of off-field career and commercial side, but playing for Mayo football was like an opportunity to play for Mayo football was like a dream come true. And I don't know how close I got to getting picked or anything like that, but I think when it all finished up in Limerick, I was devastated for the lads. Like, I not only did I feel that was kind of the end of the season for that Mayo team, but I felt it was like the end of my sporting career as well.
Yeah.
In Limerick that day, and I thought, you know, if we got to the final, could I, you know, do something magic in the final week and got on the bench, or at least, or do something like. But I just felt, oh, that's the end of my chances, and so I don't know how close I got, but it was disappointing when a couple of weeks later I was in the swim pool, local swim pool, and it was the guy, manager at the time, said to me in the swim pool in passing, I think, and he said, "Oh, sure, how'd you go with the Mayo lads?" I said, "Oh, I really enjoyed it, loved it." And he said, "Oh, sure, you couldn't have played anyway." And I said, "Nah, not too sure about that," and kind of brushed it off. And I had the kids in the swim pool, so I kind of brushed it off. But it kind of gnawed at me a bit, and I kind of, I don't know what that means. Like, you know, what does that mean? And then a couple of weeks later, I think someone said to me again, looking for an interview about something, that, "Are you disappointed the way Mayo handled the whole thing, that you couldn't play?" I said, I'm not aware of anything like that, you know. I said, I went out to play, like, try and get picked. I have no idea about that. And I kind of just brushed it off, like, and I was very conscious, Billy Joe, of the whole way through, of not making it anything in the papers. Like, when the first couple of weeks back, I had a few fellas ringing me from different sports shows saying, "Oh, we believe you're in." And David Brady, of all people, like, broke it about, "Oh, I believe Gavin Duffy's been training." And like I genuinely, I was naive, but like, when I went back training with Mayo and James Horan said, "Look, there might be something about this in the papers," but we would say nothing. I was like, "Hey, I'm not going to say anything. So unless you say something, I'm not saying anything. So nobody will know." Because I didn't want that shite either.
Yeah.
Like, because it would look like, "Oh, who does this fella think he is?"
Yeah.
But David Brady obviously broke the story. And I had a few fellas ringing me for an interview. I said, "No, I don't want to do any interviews. This isn't about..." I was doing it for me. I wasn't doing it for... If it was a Connacht and it's a professional environment, you go, "Yeah, I'd have to do the... You know, for the betterment of the professional environment." Yeah. I'm not doing any interviews. I didn't do any interviews. And even at the end, I didn't want to do any interviews around this whole registration thing. But ultimately, it resurfaced then when Holmes and Kennelly came in, and I was supposed to play an FBD game against Roscommon. And they had me picked, told me I was playing, and then said, I think you can't play because you're not registered, but we'll have it sorted. And then they changed the team sheet in a way. Maybe it was Sligo. It was actually going to be Sligo in Ballina. All That's right. what it was. And I was going, "Geez, this is a dream come true. Playing for Mayo against Sligo in Ballina, my home club that I hadn't played in 15 years.
Yeah.
And then the team sheet came through, and I remember, I think I heard on the radio saying Gavin Duffy has had to withdraw due to a hamstring injury. And I was like, "Well, that's absolute bullshit." And that really riled me.
So you didn't even get to either. They weren't even up front to say that they had fucked up the registration.
Reason stood before.
Yeah.
Supposedly the Cork game or the Kerry game, where I don't know, maybe there was an idea that maybe I could be on the bench or something. I'm not too sure, Billy Joe. I've never asked the question, because.
Yeah.
To be quite honest with you, I love the whole experience, and I never probably thought I don't know, my ego again. I thought I could get it into the bench, but I didn't want. I'm quite happy that I didn't make a big enough impact to get selected, regardless of paperwork. You know, that kind of way. If someone turned around and said, "Yeah, it was paperwork or whatever," like, I'm not bothered. Hopefully, people there felt I contributed. And that's all I ever wanted, was that people involved in the environment felt Gavin Duffy was a good contribution to what we were trying to do this summer.
Well, I think the way you've explained it there, it's really obvious in terms of what your motivations were, and they were in the right place at all times. I suppose just one question I want to ask you before we let you go is in relation to, I suppose you've been coached by, you know, Eddie O'Sullivan. You've been in dressing rooms with Brian O'Driscoll, Anthony Foley, you mentioned earlier on in this chat. You know, how do, I suppose, the people that we look up to in Mayo, and whether it be James Horan as manager or Andy Moore as a leader in the dressing room, how do the people that we look up to compare against those sort of national icons, really?
I think everyone's human, Billy Joe. I think everyone has their faults, and everyone has their positives, and when you're, I suppose, learning, you try and take you take the good out of people in terms of, oh, I really like what he said there. I really like how he handled that. And then you marry that with, oh, you didn't, maybe I would do that slightly differently. Or maybe if I was in that situation, I'd do that in a different way. And everybody, no matter if it's the under 10s girls football coach, that comes to my head because my eldest girl was down at football training tonight in the lashing rain. And even I found myself trying to instill something that my mother instilled in me when I was at that age, where I was trying to get out of training because Ireland were playing a match against England in Twickenham. And I was like, I want to watch this game on TV. And she's like, well, no, you've committed to the team. Like, if you all had that attitude, sure, you'd have no team.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And I couldn't really argue with her. I couldn't fault her, because she was, I know when you go training and you come home and you give out that X, Y, and Z wasn't at training because they were down the town or they weren't there, yeah, and you give out. I said, yeah, but Ireland are playing. She goes, it's the same thing. Everyone has a reason. Everyone can find a reason not to be at training. And I found myself tonight with my daughter, and it was lashing down rain, and she came home and she said, I don't want to go to training. And I was like, what if you all did? You'd have no team if you all said that. So you can take something from everybody, I think, along the way, whether that's someone who's coaching, as I said, the girls on a 10 team, or whether that's a national trainer or a county manager. You'll find something from everyone that you can learn from. And it doesn't mean people at one level are any way better than people at another level, just because one is professional, just because one is amateur. I think there's so many crossovers across all sports. And that's the beauty of sport. I think if you have the passion and you have a love and you want to learn and you want to just provide, now that we're out the other side, I'm not too sure if you're coaching, but I'm still playing as well. Like I'm still competitive, and my ego still at me saying I can still compete with these young lads.
Yeah.
But even the last day, I was on the pitch with Paddy Durkin and Castlebar. We played Castlebar in a challenge match, and Paddy Durkin was playing, like, and Donny Vaughan. And even just to be on the pitch with them again, just to compete. Like, if you can just instill that passion and the love of the sport and compete and be your best, and then ultimately be the best of friends with your teammates and your opposition, that's hopefully, if I can, you know, stay involved in the sport and my kids are involved in sport, that's what I would hope that they'll take out of it as well.
So it sounds, one last question, it sounds then that you've still got the bug and the love of sport, so we might be seeing you coaching up and down the country. The question I asked, though, what are you going to coach, rugby or football?
As I said, I'll coach anything. I'm coaching rugby at the moment, in terms of kind of adult level. And the reason I haven't, I suppose, coached at underage level yet is because I'm still playing Gaelic football with Saltine Na Cara. And that's taken up 2 or 3 days a week. So that's my outlet in terms of playing and running around and trying to keep up with Finian Hanley, who's kind of closest to my age, even though he's still a bit younger than me. But and that's what I get my kick from at the moment. Like I've no intention of going out, you know, all these 5Ks of people are doing during COVID, like I struggled through them. I've no interest in going out on a bike. For me, playing sports is about hanging around with fellas and being competitive and having them crack off each other. So I'm coaching adult rugby, but I can see myself helping out with underage girls and boys in the future as well in football.
I think I've taken enough of your time, Gavin. Thanks very much for a brilliant insight into your rugby career and some brilliant stories about David Brady breaking all sorts of news. He's like a GAA insider, so he is. But no, I really enjoyed it, and I think you've given us tremendous insight. Thanks very much, and look forward to seeing you coaching up and down the country sometime soon.
And look, it's been brilliant to catch up with you as well, Billy Joe. And yeah, just really enjoyed it. Thanks very much.